Wind and Fire, what more could you want? Well, you've got it. Dan Etherly, British naturalist, writer and environmental consultant. He's made a variety of documentaries for the BBC, National Geographic and the Discovery Channel, rising to the heady heights, he says, of assistant producer on two series hosted by Sir David Attenborough, Life of Mammals and Planet Earth. For his latest mission, Dan followed in the footsteps of the man who helped create one of the world's greatest zoos and is credited with inspiring generations of herpetologists, Raymond Ditmars, because Dan, who now lives in Exeter, went to the Caribbean to find the largest viper in the world before it found him. He tells the story in his book, Bushmaster. Good morning to you, Dan.
Hello.
I must admit, I have never heard of Raymond Ditmars. Tell me about him if you would.
Yeah, no, he's not exactly a household name.
Yeah.
I hope he might be after my book comes out. Well, it is out now. But he... Basically, when I was working in TV, I was making lots of different sort of films. By making, I mean kind of researching and working with a big team of people. And one of the, well, a couple of the films were about snakes. And one of the, well, both those two films were being presented by a person called Ron Whittaker. Uh-huh. And Ron is a kind of aging hippie who's been, you know, looking for snakes since the 50s. And he grew up in America on a diet of whatever snake books were around at the time, and the sort of number one hero for Ron Whittaker was Raymond Ditmars.
Okay.
Who, as we've sort of discussed, no one's heard of today, but Ron and a whole generation of herpetologists were kind of obsessed by Raymond Ditmars and his books about snakes and reptiles and so on, and Ron basically imparted his enthusiasm to me.
Right. So just a little bit more about, yeah, about Mr. Ditmars. He rose from to quite dizzy heights from being an assistant conservationist, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think he left school at 15. His dad wanted him to go into the military because
uh-huh.
he had a sort of, I think his father was in the American Civil War and he was very much regimental. And Raymond was all signed up to go off to the name escapes me now, but the big kind of West Point uh-huh. up the Hudson River, just north of New York. But I think Raymond had other ideas. He was more interested in grubbing around looking for snakes and lizards and beetles and all sorts of insects. And so he decided, I'm not going to do that. I want to hang around with other grubby little boys looking for snakes and insects. And he formed a group called the Harlem, not the Globetrotters, the Harlem Zoological Society. It doesn't exist anymore, but a bunch of school kids hanging around looking for snakes, looking for insects, generally sticking pins in insects because that's what entomologists like to do. And that caught the interest of quite a sort of fusty senior entomologist at the American Museum of Natural History. And long story short, Ditmars found himself pinning out literally millions of insects for about 6 years, and he probably wished he had gone to the West Point instead. But he continued, I can go on and on really.
Well, let's fast forward. He ended up as the curator of this zoo.
Yes, so he was basically headhunted from the museum. Well, actually, that's not quite true. He's had a complicated life. He went from the museum to the New York Times as a reporter because he had a sort of natural writing talent. And he went up to interview the new, sort of the forthcoming director of the Bronx Zoo in New York. And the director realized the guy interviewing him was obviously an amazing expert on all sorts of creepy crawlies, so hired him basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can be the first assistant curator of reptiles, and so that's how it started. We're talking late 19th century, 1898 sort of time.
And am I right, he pioneered the distribution of anti-venom across the
United States? Yeah, that came a lot later, but
But he was fascinated, let's move on to the Bushmaster, he was fascinated by a particular species of snake, this Bushmaster. I believe he was so fascinated he even had one posted to him.
Well, that's right. So, still living with his parents, he sort of built up a collection of live snakes in a kind of attic room filled of snake boxes, and he started sort of exchanging snakes with people around the world. And you got talking with this guy in Trinidad, originally actually from Bridgewater, I believe, a local connection, but by then he was living in Trinidad. Actually another reporter, he was actually an owner of a newspaper in Trinidad. He was called R.R. Moll, Richard Richardson Moll, and he was also obsessed with snakes, and he wanted to get his hands on some snakes from North America, so they did a swap. Moll sent Ditmars a bunch of rather venomous, dangerous snakes, and Ditmars sent Moll to return the compliment, really.
Lovely.
And yes, yeah, so
sort of pen friend you want.
Exactly.
So what? Tell me, what is so special about this particular species, this Bushmaster? What's so special about it?
I guess the main, it's got a few interesting characteristics. It's recorded as being the largest viper in the world.
So how big's that?
So I think people always exaggerate with the length of snakes.
Yeah, go on.
Everyone does. But probably, I think there's good records of maybe just over 11 or 12 feet long.
You don't need to exaggerate that. Yeah. That's big enough, isn't it? And what about its girth?
It's not actually a massively thick snake. It's quite a slender animal.
Right.
So, but it's not obviously pencil thin. So I guess, I've never really thought about how big it is. This makes good radio, but
that's finger and thumbs. Four fingers and thumb to make a circle, and it's that big.
And moves quickly. And the other weird thing about it is actually for a viper, this is weird, it lays eggs.
Okay.
So other pit vipers, to be specific, generally give birth to live young.
Yeah.
So rattlesnakes give birth to live young. So bushmasters are a bit weird.
Now, are they deadly? Do they bite? Do they squeeze?
They are venomous, and their bite can be deadly. It's not necessarily the most toxic venom, but because they're so big, obviously the adult ones are big, then it's just the amount of venom that goes into
it. Okay. So he failed to find one. So what made you think that you could? That was obviously the challenge. And how did you start? How did you go about it?
Well, I actually wanted to write a book as well, so the writing aspect was quite important for me. It's a bit weird, really, because I didn't really necessarily want to find one, or if I did find one, I wanted to make sure I saw it before it saw me.
Okay.
But I guess it made a good sort of story, and it made a point to kind of an adventure. So I suppose I wanted to know about Ditmars as well. That's a big aspect of the book. But I also like the idea of going to nice tropical countries.
Yeah.
And meet a lot of interesting people. Herpetologists are quite interesting. And I just thought, why not have a go? I mean, working in TV where you film, obviously, everything, nature films, you know how hard it can be to find anything. So I don't think I was massively optimistic that I would find one. Obviously, I'd hate to give away the end of the book, but
Let's see
what happened.
The journey started, I understand, closer to home, because you went looking, which was Ditmars' first hunting ground in Central Park.
That's right, yes. So basically Ditmars moved around with his parents quite a bit, and for a while he lived quite near the park. And he described quite accurately exactly which block, you know, in the street.
So you thought you would look
in the park. I'd go to the same place. He'd almost like written a treasure map to go and look for.
Because I'm keen to get onto your story.
Sure. So then I just thought, right, let's just start there. So I teamed up with a very nice lady who knew the park quite well, and we went to look for snakes, and I didn't find any. But I did find some snakes near New York City,
right,
which I can tell you about if you want to know about.
Well, I want to find out about the Bushmaster particularly, because the story is called Bushmaster. So then that led you to the Caribbean, to Trinidad, where Ditmars went looking, and you thought, this man couldn't do it, even though he was the David Attenborough of his day. But I've worked with David Attenborough. I can do this.
Yeah.
How close did you get?
So, like I say, I don't want to give away yet.
I won't give away yet, although you are here to tell the tale.
Yeah. So, basically, what I did was I found a herpetologist who knows Trinidad really well, an American guy called John Murphy, and we met up in Trinidad, and we went on a series of drives along the road at night, because although, obviously, snakes generally want to live in the jungle, the best place to really find them, or so they say, is when they're kind of basking out on the road.
It's just the heat
at night. The heat, yeah. And the road retains the heat from the day and then kind of warms them up. Yeah. And these are what you call cold-blooded animals, so they need that heat before they go out hunting. So we thought, let's go and look for some bushmasters on the road. And so we drove up and down the road, all around the kind of valleys. And the first night, we didn't find any snakes at all. And then the next night, we had another look all around the roads, no snakes. And then we had a huge thunderstorm, which was brilliant, because rain brings out frogs and things, insects, frogs, everything kind of comes to life. As I put it in my book, it's like a caffeine shop in the rainforest. So everything goes mad. So we thought, yes, we're going to find some snakes. What we did find snakes. We didn't find a bushmaster on the road, but we did find snakes. We found a lot of flat snakes. So basically, they'd all been run over by other cars.
Oh, no.
So that was a shame. Although John was delighted because he didn't care if they were alive or dead. He could just scrape them up and get their DNA.
Right. But I believe, wasn't there a farmer that
yes.
killed?
Yes. So the next day, I can't remember the exact chronology, but we woke up, we got a phone call. A farmer had found a bushmaster, a live bushmaster, right. in his on his plantation, really close to where we were. Yeah, great. Unfortunately, he hacked it to pieces.
Oh, so, okay, we won't give it away, but let's just say you weren't in any real danger.
The only time I guess I was in danger was when you're sort of walking through the forest and you can't really see where your feet go, so yeah. into sort of thick vegetation and so on. But I mean, no, despite what their reputation, snakes are not generally aggressive. The time when they sort of snappy and all that is when they're scared and they can't really get away.
I love you people who come out. He won't hurt you. That's fine.
No, he will. It will hurt you. It will hurt you very, very badly yeah. if you tread on it or tread yeah. too close to his head. But generally, it will hope you haven't spotted it.
Yeah.
And if possible, try and run away if they had legs as quick as they could.
Well, find out the full story in Bushmaster. I mean, you have been in some perilous situations in the past. You were, I believe, involved in a volcano eruption?
Yes, so this is way back, I guess, late 90s, early noughties, as they say. We were working on a film called Wild Indonesia. It's a BBC nature series, three-parter, and Indonesia is a big, obviously, archipelago of islands, many of them created by volcanic action, activity. So we thought, let's film some active volcanoes. And I think it was kind of April that Krakatoa, actually not the original Krakatoa, but what's called Anak Krakatoa, was actually erupting, which is a kind of little smaller volcano in the middle of what used to be a volcano. We're talking about an island, so in the middle of the sea, so it was erupting. So we thought, great, it's erupting. We've got a few other things to film in Indonesia, like some bats and monkeys and things. So let's be really efficient and do it all at the same time, and we'll do it, I don't know, I mean, it's been erupting for a year, so let's do it in maybe June. And we got to this little island and it was erupting. It was brilliant. And then it stopped for the first time.
Pretty scary, I should imagine.
Yeah, so we thought, right, it stopped erupting, and then we kind of went on to the island. So we were camping in a little island nearby, and I did go on the island, but then I came off the island, but there's still a few more people on it. And then we heard a bang, and sound travelled quicker than light. So I looked up in the air, and actually there were rocks kind of quite high up, quite big rocks, some of them probably the size of a car, I'd say.
Yeah.
And then I then looked down to where some of the film crew was kind of scattered over the island, and I was kind of working out where the rocks were going to drop and are they going to be okay. Yeah. But no one was hurt, but it was very dodgy, and a big rock kind of came out and splashed in the sea near our boats. So that was quite scary.
I understand that life is a little less dangerous nowadays for you.
A bit less sleep now.
And that is because?
I've got two kids.
So
my snake hunting days have been part.
This is real life. Yeah. Changing nappies.
A lot of nappies. I did one. Actually, I didn't do one this morning, but
very
I probably
scary.
Should have done.
Very scary. Well, Bushmaster Raymond Dittmars and the Hunt for the World's Largest Viper is out now, published by New York's Arcade. So what are you working on at the moment, then, Dan?
I've got writer's block, really. I'm trying to... I think I'm too busy, wrangling little children. But, I definitely want to write another book. I loved pretty much every aspect of it, the research, the amazing people you meet, the places you go that you'd never get a chance to go. I mean, you don't get any money out of writing a book unless you're, famous or something. But it's just like the real pleasure of sort of pursuing a story.
And I have to say, we've only got one copy, which you had to buy yourself to bring it to shows. Which is perfect.
Honestly, it's a real book. You can go on Amazon and buy it.
I know, which is what you did. And it's full of fantastic pictures as well. Dan Etherley, thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem. Thank you.